And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 26th, 2020. Today with John Bear, our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I am doing well, and I am excited for an examination today with you of climate questions and debates going back to 1988. And we'll also talk about the most recent debate and our enthusiasm over some of the questions that the moderator, Kristen Welker, asked. So join us.
So Mariah, what we wanted to do was to briefly focus on the what I think will be thought of as a historic climate question at a presidential debate, a historic presidential debate because of the climate questions, right? So did you see the last face-off between Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden last week?
I did. It was quite a civilized discussion of some good topics, right? There was actually some thought-provoking back and forth exchanges. So I watched it to the bitter end.
To the bitter end, because we're all on our seats. The moderator, Kristen Welker, did a very good job.
Yeah, she was phenomenal.
To her credit, for the first time, moderating the debates, which have been contentious this year. But she had promised a question about climate change in the debate. And despite the fact that the clock was running out, she did manage to get to a climate change question.
A couple of them.
Yeah. And I wanted to talk about those, but I did just as backdrop, I wanted to go through a little bit about the history of climate questions at presidential debates. Right, because it serves, just a quick reminder, serves to put the debate the other night into context for climate hawks, to understand the implications of the fact that the kinds of questions that Kristen Welker asked. So what I did, it turns out, I put it in the link, Mariah, I went and found a website that has all the climate questions from the debates dating back to 1988. 1988 being an important year because that was the year Jim Hansen made an announcement to Congress that climate change was real. Right? So things were floating around at that time. And I won't read all this. Briefly, in 1988, at the vice presidential debate, there was a question that said, started out, no one knows. This is the moderator. No one knows, but most scientists think that there's something we're doing, human beings are doing, are exacerbating the problem of climate change, and that this could, in a couple of generations, threaten our descendants. Fine. Lloyd Bentsen, who is a senator from Texas, this is 1988 vice presidential debate, says, well, I think what you can do for that and would be really good is to burn more natural gas, which burns a lot cleaner. So the whole debate we've been having now about natural gas echoes all the way back to 1988. And strangely enough, Dan Quayle, famously who couldn't spell a potato in the debate at that year, right? He said, now the greenhouse effect is an important environmental issue. Right? God bless him. It is important for us to get the data in to see what the alternatives to fossil fuels and make sure we know what we're doing. So in 1988, it seemed like both sides were at least conversant with the issue and didn't want to disparage it too much. 1992, you go forward to the, again, the vice presidential debate. This was now with Clinton and Bush. And the guy says, everyone wants, and here, listen to the framing of the 1992 question. Everyone wants a safe and clean environment, but there's an ongoing conflict between environmental protection and the need for economic growth and jobs. All right, so you've already dismissed any other kinds of thoughts. How would you resolve this, basically? And Quayle, again to his credit, says, Mr. Moderator, that's a false choice between jobs and the environment. Okay, so this is the GOP guy. You don't have to choose between environment and jobs. You can have both. Gore, at the time, this is 1992, said, Clinton and I believe we can create millions of new jobs by leading the environmental revolution. Same story playing out. Then in 1996, they asked, this is Camp and Dole, do you share the fear about the environment being in jeopardy? And they both had, you know, we want a positive question. Kemp says, we recognize we have to live with in balance with our environment. And in 2000, again, Al Gore is asked, do you still feel the way you feel? Do you think that we must rescue the environment and make it the central organizing principle of civilization? And Gore says, of course I do. Bush goes in. Now get this. This is interesting. This is George W. Bush in the year 2000. What does he say? No, let me fan forward. This is Bush in the 2004 debate. I'm losing track. Bush in 2004 said, oh yeah, the forests are mismanaged. We're not cleaning up the forest floor, so they're all tinderboxes to burn up, which is, I think, something we've heard recently from another president. About. And then, in long and short of, this goes back and forth. The framing of the questions has been challenging for the climate movement. There were questions up to the 2008 election in which John McCain and Barack Obama were competing. Then in the year 2012, which was Obama and Romney, and again in 2016, when it was Clinton and Trump, there were simply no questions asked. So in the last 12 years, since 2008, there has not been at the presidential debate level a question about climate change. And so that's the context for where we are now. All right. That's just a little history lesson.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting. I remember in some of those elections, like being really upset that they gave like a minute. I think there was, certainly no questions. I think there wasn't even really much discussion about climate change. There's maybe a minute of talk about it in maybe one of the debates. I think I remember little article about that. But I was reading this New York Times article, and it talks about how in some ways, some of the reason for the lack of sort of a deep dive into climate change in the presidential debates was that there wasn't a ton of difference to some degree in the stance of the candidates. So in the 2008 McCain-Obama presidential campaign, both candidates believed that climate change was real and serious, and they had kind of similar proposals to address it. So it doesn't make for, if you put that into a debate and both people say, I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you too. Right. That doesn't really help voters to choose. So that was some of the justification why it didn't this New York Times article made, why it didn't pop up. With Mitt Romney against Obama, there was both candidates again accepted the reality of climate change and the need to address it. It just at varying different degrees, according to this article. So, I think we've seen a lot. I mean, every single debate so far in this election there's been climate change questions, which I've been super excited about. You've been super excited about. All of us climate, fans are.
I can remember being like a guy in the desert waiting for John Kerry and George W. Bush to mention the word and being thrilled when there was even a glancing reference to it. It's been a long way. And I guess let's for a moment, what I'll do is I'll read the two questions that Kristen Welker asked, right? Put aside the answers, because that's a whole other thing. We can talk about the answers if we want. But the questions themselves were different. So let me find those.
And I think it's also worth mentioning that in the first debate, Chris Wallace asked sort of a question that was more about, do you accept the climate science, right? Do you accept the consensus on climate science? So there was sort of this like, trying to pin both candidates down to saying, yes, this is happening and yes, this is existing in the first debate. And then Kristen, as you'll, when you read those questions to us, she was like, okay, the science is there. Now let's talk about what we're going to do about it. Even an environmental justice question, which I think was fantastic to see that come up in the debate.
So what she asked was, this is now, an hour and 17 minutes and 48 seconds into the debate. She says, gentlemen, we're running out of time, so we got to get on to climate change, please. You both have very different versions on visions on climate change. To your point, Mara. You both have very different visions on climate change. President Trump, you say that environmental regulations have hurt jobs in the energy sector. Vice President Biden, you have said you see addressing climate change as an opportunity to create new jobs. For each of you, how would you both combat climate change and support job growth at the same time? Starting with you, blah, blah, blah. 2 minutes uninterrupted. I mean, that's absolutely, you're on spot. And it bears repeating that she didn't even say, do you believe in the tooth fairy, right? Do you believe in climate change? She said, okay, boom. What are you going to do about it? Which is a refreshing new stance, right?
Yeah.
And again, to her credit. Then the other question she said, this was the one that really flipped me out because it's a great question. She said, let me ask this final question in this section, and then I want to move on. President Trump, people of color are much more likely to live near oil refineries and chemical plants. In Texas, there are families who worry the plants near them are making them sick. Your administration has rolled back regulations on these kinds of facilities. Why should these families give you another 4 years in office? Which is like, so what do you make of the recognition of environmental justice issues at this level of politics? I mean,
yeah, I think it's huge. Of course, you know, in both cases, in both of the debates, these questions were asked at the very end, right? And, you know, I don't know any of the actual analysis here, but how many people are still tuning in towards the end of the debate, right? You know, I would assume that they often front load this sort of
The COVID
hotter questions. Yeah, right up at the beginning. And they, you know, these come toward the end. So, you know, while I'm super excited that there's been so much airtime for climate change and all of the, you know, the vice presidential debate and both of these debates, I do wish that it was, you know, more at the front, because it's true. I mean, you know, not only are people that are living near some of these oil refineries, some of these fossil fuel companies having greater threats to their health, but they're also more susceptible to COVID. We've talked about the links between COVID and climate change frequently. And so, you know, why couldn't that question follow right after the COVID, right? You know, because this is life and death situations for people.
I think is that mentioning environmental justice, again, in the silo, right? So it's been siloed into a climate change issue, right? We're going to talk about climate change as opposed to the all-encompassing COVID, the mix of all the crises we face, right? But the fact that this came up, to me, represents how the climate movement has shifted and recognizes that it's not so much polar bears that are in trouble as people in our own, you know, and the injustice in right in front of us that we can do something about is central to the entire project, right? The whole question is, we said about if you can have a sacrifice zone, you're gonna sacrifice it and put the fossil fuel there, right? And so, to my mind, this is,
and to clarify, we don't think that should happen, but that's often what does happen.
I mean, the fact that this was raised to the up to the point of having a second question, I think it marks a shift in climate activists' perception and in what we are pushing for. I mean, I think it's really, really a useful and good thing that's happened.
Yeah. And I think that it's also, I think that climate change has moved up in voter priority for many voters this election cycle more than it has in the past. And so, well, I think there's, you know, what I was saying from that New York Times article is that some of the reason they've been talking about it more recently is because there's more of a difference of opinion in these two candidates than there has been in the past elections. But I also think that it's the interest in climate as a voting priority has risen in part due to some of the wildfires and the floods and the hurricanes and the things that are threatening people's lives more directly and more intensely and more visibly than the sort of one day it's going to affect us. And so I think there's sort of a dual prong here. You have two very different approaches to how to manage the climate change situation, as well as a rise of interest in climate as a voting priority due to the increased natural disasters that we're seeing.
Well, I think that, I mean, I think it was you said a few shows ago, I think for the current president to say things like COVID will disappear in the summertime, it's all going to magically go away, and then somehow also have this magical thinking that, oh yeah, climate change, the temperatures will start going down again. People see those crosslinks. And I guess to your original point, Mariah, that these questions could have been woven into anything. Because of the breadth of the impact of climate change, we could have been talking about front fence line communities in the COVID section, right? Probably should have been, because that's maybe that's the next frontier of questions that media needs to approach, is to have climate integrated into the other crises, because it's not a standalone crisis. It affects everything else. It's not like you can solve climate change without addressing all these other issues. And the integration is when you really get to when you integrate climate into jobs, health, justice, all these things, that's when it takes on the full breadth of its ability to push the society.
Yeah, it's certainly something that should be woven into the fabric of everything that we do, right? Because it affects everything that we do. It's fundamental to our existence as humans.
So there you go. We have had a watershed moment, I think, in the climate movement and getting on the political map. I mean, Bill McKibben sent out a tweet saying, you know, the good thing about those questions is it means climate change is now part of the conventional wisdom, right? We can talk about it without being embarrassed or feeling like some sort of a fringe nutcase, right? It is in the net. And that is a credit to everyone who's listening to this podcast, who cares about the issue, who's been pushing for this stuff. And we should just note that there's this marker. I mean, we could always go backsliding. God knows there's the 2024 campaign we hope is coming along, right? But this is a marker of a good thing. So I'm pretty happy.
Me too. Yeah, right. It's a start for sure.
It's a start. So what we'll do is we'll put up links to what we talked about at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want to send us a note on how you think climate should be integrated into questions about the world, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. If you're listening to the show on your favorite podcast distribution app, please tell your friends that they can listen to it on their favorite podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for this dive into history and recognizing big moments, huh?
Always fun.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.